We're holding on page Kuf Ches in Brachas, Ois Kuf Mem Zayin. Bezes Hashem, today we'll finish Brachas in Ein Yakov. The Gemara now is going to bring a bunch of statements by Rav Ovin Halevi, where a couple of them connect with what we learned yesterday about how Yisroi was Makarev Moshe for his own Hanah, which we said Rashi had said when in this week's parasha, when he makes a Suda and invites Moshe and Aaron and all the Skenim. Marsha says it means earlier when Yisroi first brought Moshe into his household. Anyway, we said he got tremendous chosim for that, for himself and his family. So now a couple of Rav Ovin Halevi's statements are going to also relate to Yisroi and Moshe. So therefore, that's one reason why the Gemara brings them in. But then first, the Gemara brings in a few other statements of his. Amar Rav Ovin Halevi, kol adoichek as hashah, a person who pushes the hour, meaning so you can have a person who is going to eventually reach to a high position, but instead of waiting patiently for it to happen, for the Eibishter to orchestrate things to make it happen, he tries pushing his way first and make it happen. Shah de facto, so then the hour ends up pushing him. In other words, he ends up getting pushed away and he fails in what he's trying to accomplish. May Avshalom, we see that from Avshalom, because what happened, Avshalom was when he started his revolt against David, he was the oldest of David's, he was the oldest living one of David's sons. David had an older son, Amnon, who had been killed a few years earlier. Actually, Avshalom had killed him, but that's a whole other story. Anyway, the point is, at this point, Avshalom is the next oldest. So he figured he's bound to be the king. So what happened though? He pushed it and started revolting against David instead of just waiting until David passed away and then try to seize the kingship. And he ended up getting pushed away. His revolt failed and he got killed. Marsha mentions particularly you have the mazel of the hour, the mazel of the time is what is instrumental in making something happen. So how would a person be able to push against that mazel would only be with special help from Hashem. So therefore, if a person does that and he doesn't have that special help from Hashem, then the mazel is going to overpower him.
He's pushing himself in, not waiting for the time to come.
Not waiting for the time to come, exactly, right. So in other words, the idea being, if Avshalom had waited until after David passed away, and then he had tried to seize the kingship, he probably would have had a much easier time of it, as opposed to trying to revolt while David was alive and still strong and vigorous. It didn't work out yet. On the other hand, when a person allows himself to be pushed away by the hour, meaning the opposite, he says, "I'll be patient." He knows, fine, eventually he's destined to have some kind of greatness, but he'll wait for it rather than trying to push his way into it. Shah imedislo, then the time will stand up for him. In other words, Hashem will arrange that takahi, that the things that would have been a certain way, the derech hateva, are going to be pushed aside for his sake. And we have that example, midrabba v'rab Yosef. We have the example to show that of what happened with Rabba and Rab Yosef. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So here we have an example in the Gemara from Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. What happened is the Rabbi Yosef Sinai the Rabba Oikahor. Now, in terms of their styles of knowledge of Torah and their learning, Rabbi Yosef was Sinai. They nicknamed him that because he was expert, Rashi says, in a lot of braises. So therefore, it was like the facts were as clear and well-arranged in his mind as when they were given by Harsina. So he had that. So he had that talent, but he wasn't so much into pilpul. Now there's two aspects of Torah. There's knowing the facts, knowing the bottom line facts, the Mishnayos, and then there's being able to analyze them and being able to deduce new dinim from them. So Rabbi Yosef's specialty was that he knew lots of facts in Torah, but not so much how to analyze them and come up with new dinim based on that. But Rabba, Oikahorim, Rabba's specialty was Oikahorim, the Gemara elsewhere uses the expression Oikahorim, Matochin, and Zubazu, in more full, that he could pick up mountains, he'd rip out mountains and grind them one against the other, representing, in other words, that he was very good, that he was very sharp and pilful, being able to take different halachas that seem to contradict each other and reconcile them and show how we can derive new halachas from that. That was Rabba's specialty. So now it's tzricha lehu shaita. The hour needed them, meaning that they needed a new Rosh Hashiva for the yeshiva of Pumbedisa in Bavli, which at that time was one of the top yeshivas in the world. So shochu lehasam, they sent a message to there, meaning to Eretz Yisrael, Sinai ve'oikahorim ezimahem kodim. When we have a choice between a new Rosh Hashiva who's Sinai or who's oikahorim, which one should come first? Which one is the preferable Rosh Hashiva? And they sent back from Eretz Yisrael, Sinai Koidem, Sinai should take precedence, meaning Rabbi Yosef, everybody needs the master of wheat. In other words, the Rabbi Yosef who has at his fingertips lots of Mishnayos and Brises and things like that, he can be compared to a person who has lots of wheat available to sell, where there you can take the wheat and turn it into whatever it is you need. So therefore, so you're better off with that, rather than with Rabbah, who knows fewer of those brises, but can analyze them more analytically and deeper.
Who answered that?
So then the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael answered that. Who was in charge in Eretz Yisrael at that time? I mean, the Gemara just says Shochu Mitam. I think there is some place where the Gemara mentions the Gemara someplace gives a list of when it says in the Gemara different things, like for example, Shochu Mitam, who it refers to, which of the Chachamim it refers to. I think maybe it says Rabbi Yumi, but I'm not sure. In any case, the Chachamim about to say, they knew it's between these two, yeah. So they knew it's between these two. There's actually places in Sichas where the Rebbe talks about the idea that this reflects more the difference between the styles of learning in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel, where in Eretz Yisrael they favored the Sinai type of approach more, and in Bavel they favored the Oikahorim type, which is why the Bavli is much more complicated and lengthy and complex than the Yerushalmi, for example. Anyway, so Afal became like Kibbel all of Rabbi Yosef. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yosef did not want to accept the position. And the reason was the Amri like Kaldoi, because Kaldoi had told him. Most of the Mephoshim explain that Kaldoi means stargazers. There's one place where Rashi says it means people who do black magic, which is a little hard to understand, because how could you even listen to such people? As far as stargazers, we've shown him discuss it. The Gemara does say in Pesachim, you're not supposed to ask them about the future, because Tomim Tiyeh Masham Lekecha, but if you hear from them a prediction, then you should still give it some weight, because they do know what they're talking about, and therefore you should take it into consideration. So here the vote would be, not that Rabbi Yosef went to such people, but they had told him on their own, and therefore he pays attention to it. So they told him, Malchus Tautin Shnin, you are going to rule, meaning you're going to be Rosh Hashiva for 2 years. So therefore, he didn't want to become Rosh Hashiva, because then he's only going to last 2 years, and then he's going to pass away. So instead, he waited. This is the example of Nitchem Ipnei Ashah. He was willing to let the time pass, and he'll have, since he was told that it's going to happen, he knew it'll happen in the future, and this way he'll prolong his life. So sure enough, Molech Rabbah Esrin the Tautin Shnin. So Rabbah was Rosh Hashiva for 22 years. And then Molech Rabbah Yosef Tautin Shnin Upauga. And then Rabbi Yosef was Rosh Hashiva for 2.5 years. He actually got the extra half year. Some Mephoshim say because of this point, because he was willing to be, this is the example what the Gemara says, Hashah Nidcheslo, Hashah Imedesloi. That actually what happened was because he was willing to let it go, and he'll take up the position only later, then therefore now the mazel of that time, so to speak, the ruchnis, the sources of that time stood up for him, and he was able to get Min HaShemayim an extra half a year. Another point is also because we know that the stargazers never say things that are 100% true. So therefore it couldn't be 100% true. There had to be a little inaccuracy in it. Anyway, so sure enough, we see that he was Nidcha Mipnei Ashah, and therefore that happened. There is a footnote, by the way, in a Maimah from Tavshin Ches, there's a footnote from the Rebbe in those years. You know, the Rebbe was the editor of Kahos, among other things, and he used to very often put very, very lumdisha and very deep footnotes in the Friedrich Rebbe's Maimorim explaining different concepts in Torah. So one of them, he talks about, you have this Gemara in Hodias as well, and there in Hodias it doesn't say anything about the stargazers saying anything to Rabbi Yosef. So the implication seems to be that actually all Gemara and the one in Hodias are taking different approaches, which one is better, Sinai or Oikahori. According to that Gemara, just Rabbi Yosef refused the position, implying, in other words, that Gemara is saying that Oikahori is better. Whereas all Gemara is saying Sinai really would have been better, and it was only because of a side issue that Rabbi Yosef decided not to accept the position. Anyway, Kol Hanach Shni the Malach Rabba, during all those 22 years that Rabba was Rosh Hashiva, Afula Umna Labesa Lekora, Rabbi Yosef would not even call a blood letter to his house. So Rashi over here explains that it means throughout all those years, he didn't want to show even the littlest bit of srara, of rulership. So to call a doctor to his house, to make a house call, would be like a little bit of rulership. So if he needed bloodletting, instead of asking the doctor to come to him, as he usually would, he would go to the doctor. In Hodias, Rashi explains it differently, that it means that he wouldn't go to, instead of having the bloodletter come to him, he would go to Rabba's house, and there he would have the bloodletter come. So like he's not even asking the bloodletter to come to his own house. And there's another explanation, I think, as well, that the vote would be that during all those years, Rabbi Yosef was so healthy, he didn't even need a blood letter. So that's an example of Nidcha Mipnei Hashoah, and you're giving another example in Rabbi Lau. So yeah, there are other such examples where a person is willing to wait for something, knowing that eventually the Ebishter will make it happen, and he doesn't have to push his way into it right now. Yeah. Another one, V'omer of Oben Alevi, Mai Dichtiv Yancha Hashem B'yem Tzorei Sagev Hashem Alekei Yaakov. The Pasuk says, Hashem will answer you on the day of trouble. The name of the God of Yaakov will fortify you. Yisagevcha, the word Sagev means strength or fortifying. So why Alekei Yaakov? Alekei Avraham Yitzchak. Isn't Hashem also the God of Avraham Yitzchak? Why are we specifically saying Yaakov? Mikan Babala Koda, Shikonis Ba'ovia Shokoda. From here, we learn that the owner of the beam should be carrying the heavy end of the beam. In other words, metaphorically, imagine you have a heavy beam that you need to carry. So you, the owner of it, should be willing to take the initiative and take the biggest part of the burden, and then you'll ask other people to help. The same way over here, Yaakov bore the heaviest burden of raising the Jewish people because he's the one who had the tzad gidol bonim of raising the 12 shvatim. And he had to daven a lot for that. So therefore, so now Yisagev Hashem Elokei Yaakov, in the schus of Yaakov, is what you'll be answered and you'll be fortified. Marsha says a little differently. He says that the midah of Yaakov, Hashem Elokei Yaakov, the midah of Yaakov, who is the nichnas ba'ov Yaakoda, he's the one, that schus will be what stands by you in a Yom Tzara. Anybody who has hana from a meal where a Talmid Chacham is present at that meal, it's as if he had hana from the radiance of the Shechina. Shenema, we have in this week's parashah, that Aaron and all the Zkenim came to eat bread and food with Moshe's father-in-law in front of Hashem. Now you have to ask, were they eating in front of Hashem? They're eating in front of Moshe. And Marsha brings from Rashi mentions on the Mechilta mentions, and Rashi mentions on the Pasuk that Moshe was serving them. So one way of understanding it is, if we understand that Moshe was serving as the waiter, then it means that they're not even eating with Moshe, but they're eating in his presence. So therefore, kielu nanim ziv hashchina. Another way of looking at it is that it means that Aaron and the Ziknei Yisrael are the ones that he's eating in their presence, because again, Moshe is serving as the waiter, and therefore, so it's not considered a suda in his presence, but you have this the presence of the other chacham over there, of the other Talmid Chacham, Aaron and the Skene. So when a person malach, so it comes to tell you, it's as if he's having hana from the radiance of the shchina. One point, the Maharal makes a point in his Pirush Gur Aliyah on the Pasuk. He says the vote is that since the Talmid Chacham himself is somebody who is capable of being nenim ziv hashchina, he's the one who is zoicha l'chayyur elam abba. And we say, we had earlier in the Masech, that the Talmid Chachamim sit b'atresein b'reshein with the crowns of ruchnius on their head, the nenim ziv hashchina. So therefore, when a person eats at such a meal, then he also gets to enjoy some of that radiance of the shchina that accompanies the Talmid Chacham. Then the Gemara continues. When a person is taking leave of another person, al yomel leich bishalom, he should not tell him leich bishalom with a bays, ela leich lishalom, but rather go lishalom. Bishalom would mean with peace. Lishalom would mean to peace. And we see the example Yisrael tells Moshe, when Moshe asks permission to leave Midian and go back to Mitzrayim, take his wife and children and go back to Mitzrayim, and Yisrael tells him, Leich l'sholem, all of Hitzliach, and Moshe was raised up and was successful. David, on the other hand, when Avshalom was ready to start his revolt that we were saying before, so he also asks David for permission to leave. He claims that he wants to go to Hebron in order to get animals there for korbanos, because very good quality sheep were raised in Hebron. Anyway, so he was a Nazir, so he was a Nazir Olam, so every now and then he had to bring korbanos, and David tells him, Leich b'shalom. And the result was Holach v'nitla. Eventually, Avshalom ended up getting hanged because his hair got caught in a tree and he's suspended over there. And then Yoav's soldiers found him and killed him. So the Beis versus the Lamed. So what's the idea behind it? So Hakosev brings over here like this. When you're speaking to a mess, if you say to him Leich l'shalom, then that would mean you're telling him you have yet shalom to accomplish. So therefore, you still have to work on it. But he's already gone from this world. He has nothing more to accomplish. Now it's time for his schar. Therefore, instead you tell him Leich b'shalom, meaning you're going to go with the shalom that you worked on while you were alive. And vice versa, when you're speaking to a living person, if you say Leich b'shalom, then it would mean that you're telling him that you have all the shalom you already accomplished and you're not going to accomplish anymore, chas v'shalom. So instead, you tell him Leich l'shalom, meaning go in a way that you'll continue to accomplish and to increase more in shalom. Marsha brings a different point, Leich l'shalom means that anything you're doing, whenever you go, wherever you're going, you should be successful over there. You should have shalom over there. When the person has passed away, there's nothing yet for him to accomplish. So then you tell him, so the living person, you say Leich l'shalom, go to such and such a place, and you'll find shalom there. Leich b'shalom will imply that only right now do you have shalom, but wherever you're going, you're not going to. Right. So, and then on the other hand, when it's a mess, Leich l'shalom would imply that he's going to accomplish something in the caver, and he's not. He can't accomplish there anymore. So you tell him Leich b'shalom, on the way to the caver, you should have shalom until you reach the caver. With that said, though, Ion Yaakov points out you have some psukim that don't seem to fit with that. You have places where you have Bisholim and Bisholim used interchangeably. So he says maybe it's actually not necessarily that it must be like that, but it's more the idea that if you say the wrong one kind of. Ion Yaakov says that you see examples to the contrary. So it's really more that if you say Bisholim versus Lisholim, then what it means is like it might be the other person, Fakir, the other person is going to be taking offense at it, and therefore you should be careful about that. Not so much because objectively Lisholim means good and Bisholim means bad, but just because the other person may take it that way, basically. Say it's from Lisholim, fine. I mean, the Malachim are alive also. Why Taka did David say Leich b'shalom to Avshalom? So one point is, I think Ben Yehoyada says that Taka the Eibishter made David trip up. He meant to say l'shalom, and he said b'shalom because it was a nevuah k'tana of what's going to end up happening to Avshalom. Shenema, as the pasuk says, va'ata tovei al avisecha. So va'omer of Avon Alevi haniftim in a mess. Conversely, when you're taking leave of a mess, al yomel leich l'shalom, you shouldn't say to him leich l'shalom for any of these reasons that we said, because then you're implying he still has what to accomplish. El leich bishalom, rather you tell him go with peace. Shenema, as Hashem tells Avraham, va'ata tovei al avisecha bishalom, you will come to your father's bishalom. In other words, when a person has been by a Levaya and now he's like taking his farewell and leaving, so he should say to the mess, Leich b'shalom. Interesting point, actually. There's a vote from the Chofetz Chaim in this week's parasha when Yisro is telling Moshe about appointing judges. He says to him, "If you do this, then kol amazal mekumi yovad bishalom." So what happened based on our Gemara over here, which it said lishalom? He says the idea is because like this, you can have cases where a person where a case wasn't judged fairly by the dayanim, and the result is, yeah, and you have stories, you have famous stories like this, where a person has to come back as a gilgal in order that now the money actually changes hands as it's supposed to, as it should have done all along. So now Yisro is telling Moshe, if you set up a system of judges and everybody is judged fairly and honestly, etc., everybody will be able to come bishalom. They'll go after 120. They'll be buried, and they never have to come back to the world again to make up for what they missed the first time around. The Gemara continues. Amar Levi Bachia, Hayotzim Beis Hakneses V'Nichnas LeBeis Medrash. When a person goes out of shul and goes into the Beis Medrash, Umi Beis Medrash LeBeis Hakneses, and vice versa, when he's finished learning Torah, then he goes to the shul. But Oisik BaTorah, and he's occupying himself with Torah. Zoich LaHak B'Pnei Hashchina, he has the schus to greet the face, the presence of the Shechina. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yelchu Mechayel Achoyel, they will go from strength to strength. Yeroa Elolikim B'Tzion, they will appear before Hashem in Tzion. So Yelchu Mechayel Achoyel implies that they're going back and forth from one place of strength to another. Marsha points out also the word Chayel literally means an army. It means a large number of people. So therefore it means, so he's going from Shul, where he's davening with Tzibur, and he's going from there to the Beis Medrash, where he's learning Torah b'tzibur, as we just had previously, that you're supposed to learn Torah b'chavura in a group, and back and forth like that. So therefore, Yeroa Elokim b'tzion, he gets to fulfill the mitzvah of Aliyah l'regel and seeing the presence of the Shechina. So that's what we mean. Therefore, that the zoicha lahakbo pnei Shechina. We don't just mean, in other words, Marsha says that he's zoicha lahakbo pnei Shechina la'asid lavoi in Gan Eden. We mean also that he'll be zoicha to greet Hashem's presence in the Beis Mikdash. Yeroa calls Chofa. Then the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Chiya ba'ashi Amar Rav. Tamid Chachamim ein lahem menucha loy ba'olam hazeh v'loy ba'olam haba. Tamid Chachamim have no rest in this world or in the next world. Shenema, the same pasuk. Yochol mechayel ochoyel yeroy al kim b'tzion. So they're going from strength to strength. So they never sit. They never stop and rest in any one place. Now, Marsha says, what are you talking about? Don't we say that Olam Haba is Yom Shekul Shabbos and Nuchal Lachaya Ha'olamim? So he's saying, we're not talking about, of course, that they have no menucha as far as melacha. We mean that they have their what they're working on is that they're working with their mind. They're understanding higher and higher levels of Torah and higher levels of Elikus. So they never have menucha from that. They're constantly doing that, and that's when we say that again, that tzaddikim yoshu menen and miziv hashchina. In other words, because they understand Elikus on higher and higher levels. There are a couple of sichas where the Rebbe shtelled sich on this. One of them was on Hey Av 1 year, or actually on Shabbos Dalet Av the day before. Hey Av is the Yotzei to the Arizal. So 1 year the Rebbe talked about this in terms of an explanation that the Arizal gives of this Gemara. So first of all, the Arizal's explanation is that the Arizal explains, in other words, that that you have there's a when we're talking about over here Tamar Chacham in my menucha even ba'olam haba, what we mean is during the when we have to remember that the word olam haba has two different meanings. It means the world where neshamas go after 120, and it also means the time after Tchias Meisim. So here the Arizal says we're talking about the first one. So there still is an olam hazeh. But right now, the neshamas of the Tamar Chachamim are in Olam Abba, simultaneously with us being in Olam Hazeh. So we're saying at that point, they don't have menucha because they're still reaching higher and higher levels of understanding of Elikus. And he says even Moshe Rabbeinu is going higher and higher like that, because just like Hashem is endless, so the Torah is endless. And he brings in this connection, the pasuk, Yetze Odom Lefolev La'Avedasa Adayov, a person goes out to his work and to his labor until the evening, meaning as long as there exists an Olam Hazeh, which is Doim LaErev, which is like the evening, because of course he's concealed in it, then therefore he's continuing to do his work. So then, So the Rebbe goes on to explain. So now then that answers Mal Shaul's question. When we say Yom Shekula Shabbos Menucha, we're talking about the world after Tchias Amesi. That's different. The Arizal is explaining that our Gemara is talking about the time before Tchias Amesi, the time when the Neshamas now are in Gan Eden. And then the Rebbe goes on to explain at some length the idea that here we're saying Tamar Chachamim Ein Lahem Menucha. So we're talking about that. Now you have this Gemara is also in Moed Kot. So then the Rebbe discusses that there's the difference between them. Where in Moed Kot, we're just saying that they constantly go from one level to another, and therefore the expression over there is not here. The expression is that they have no rest. Loi ba'olam hazeh v'loi ba'olam haba. There in Moed Kot, the expression is just they don't have afilu la'olam haba. So the chiddush is, in other words, that even after they passed away, they still, as the Arizal says, are going higher and higher. Meanwhile, in Olam Hazeh, of course, they're going mechayel achoyel. So in Moed Katan, it focuses on that. Here in Brachos, we're talking about an increase la'ein aruch, something that's completely beyond any limitation of what they've done until now. So therefore, we're saying loy ba Olam Hazeh, loy ba Olam Haba, that even in Olam Hazeh, they're going past the limitations of Olam Hazeh and going higher and higher. And then the Rebbe goes on and then talks about various other explanations of this pasuk Yetzer Adam the fall of Lavados Adar Apichsidus and from the Arizal and so forth. Then a follow up sicha, so that's one. Then there's a follow up sicha 2 weeks later, Chafa of that same year, where the Rebbe focused on. Now we have the girsa over here that was saying Tamid Chachamim in Lam Menucha, but you have a different girsa that's brought in some places. That says that actually the Gur says tzaddikim in lahem menucha. So in that second sicha that I've talked about, again focusing back on this vote from the Arizal that we're talking about that they're learning Torah and going from higher and higher to higher and higher levels. The word tzaddikim over here means primarily people who are dealing not so much with Torah but with avodah of mitzvahs. And so that ever goes on and develops the idea. This sicha is also in Chelek Tesvav. That there's a bleak vol aspect within Torah, there's also a bleak vol aspect within mitzvahs. So therefore, when we say the gir said tzaddikim ein lahem menucha, loy l'ba olam hazeh, loy l'ba olam haba, that would refer to within the mitzvahs themselves the bleak vol aspect of it that they're achieving and going higher and higher, not just in olam haba, but even in olam hazeh. Say, there was yet a third sicha where the Rebbe talked about that. Third sicha actually will go with the next
They're always alive.
So then the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Chanina, Tamidei Chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam. Tamidei Chachamim bring greater peace into the world. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, V'chol banayich limudei Hashem. All of your children will be learned of Hashem. V'rav shloim banayich, and great will be the peace of your children. Al tikur banayich ela banayich. So don't read banayich your children, because one thing is, why would it be repeating the word banayich? So it already says V'chol banayich limudei Hashem. Why would it repeat again? V'rav shloim banayich. So therefore, we learn that the second one is hinting al tikur banayich ela banayich your buildings. So therefore, we see that the ones who build up the world, there's actually a Gemara in Shabbos, in fact, that uses the word banoyim, which means builders, to refer to Tamar Chachamim, because they build up the world, the Ruchnius and Begachin, and from that, Begachinus. So therefore, we're saying that they bring tremendous peace to the world. V'rav shloim banoyich. And the Gemara continues with other psukim on this theme, where it also says, Shalom Rav La'ove Se'asecha, those who love your Torah have great peace, Ve'im Lomim Michshel, and they have no stumbling. Yehi Shalom Bechelech, the next passage continues, Yehi Shalom Bechelech, may there be peace among your armies. Shalvabat, which can also mean the word Bechel, actually can have a double meaning. It can mean your armies, it can also mean within your walls. The Gemara explains in some places that you have, there's a Chel and there's a Choyma. The Choyma is the high wall. The chayil is a lower wall near it, which helps prevent enemy armies from coming too close to the big wall. So therefore, there should be peace within that. Shalva b'amin esayich, there should be tranquility in your in your palaces. The next pasuk continues, Laman acha v'reyah, for the sake of my brothers and friends, adabra no shalom bach, I will speak now of peace to you. The next pasuk continues, Laman beis Hashem alekeinu avakcha toiv lach, for the sake of the house of Hashem, I will seek your good. And we finish off, Hashem oiz la'am yitein, Hashem will give his people strength, Hashem yivorech his ami b'shalom, Hashem will bless his people with shalom. So now, what is all this doing over here? B'shalom, that's the yeah. So now, what is this doing over here? Yeah. So Marsha explains that this actually has to do now. This last thing, Tamar Chachamim Ma'avim Shalom Ba'olam, is famously found at the end of four Masechtas in Shas. Besides for Brachas, it's also at the end of Yevamos and Nozir and Christus. Why is it over here at the end of Brachas? So Marsha says the entire Masechta has been talking about Tfilos and Brachas, which were all come up with by the Chachamim. The Chachamim are the ones who told us to say these Tfilos and their Brachas. And the purpose of it was in order to increase Shalom Ba'olam, in order to increase Shalom between the Jewish people and Hashem. And then those are what keep the world existing, because those stand instead of the Avodah of Shlosh Advarim Olam Omen, Allah Todah, Allah Avodah, Agmos Chasadim. And since the Avodah of the Korbanos we don't have anymore, then Tefillah substitutes for it. So we're mentioning this whole idea that the Tefillahs and the Brachas that the Chachamim set up for us are all what keep the world standing and bring Shalom into it. The Aruch HaNer then points out there's another time that Eben made a hadron on Brachos, where he talks about the idea that since Masechta Brachos in particular begins with Kabbalas El Malchus Shemaim, it begins with Emes Hakoron Shema Ba'arvis. So now at the end of the Masechta, we're talking about when a person is learning Torah, what's this Altiku Bonoich El Bonoich? The idea is a person has to approach Torah with the mentality of a ben, that he's a son of Hashem and he has a bittul towards Hashem. Then with that, he'll be able to be Bonoich. That's what it means, Altiku Bonoich El Bonoich, and that's the connection between the beginning of the Masechta and the end of it. When you have that foundation of Yiras Shemayim in order to learn Torah and in order to feel that you're a son of Hashem before you're going to start building up the Torah. Now there's also, again, you have this ending is found at the end of four Masechtas. In each place individually, Marshal gives a reason why it belongs to that Masechta. The Aruch HaNer still is bothered by still, why do you have it in four different places, the identical words? And the Aruch HaNer talks about that he says there's four aspects of Shalom. There's Shalom between Hashem and a person. There's Shalom between Adam L'Chaveh, right? Between a person, between a man and his wife, and between the Guf and the Neshama. And he goes on and explains how each of these reflects one of those. Here in Brachas, we're talking about the dinim of Krishma and Tefillah and Brachas to connect with Hashem. Then therefore, that has to do with Shalom between Hashem and a person. And that's why we have this thing about Tamar Chachamim Ma'abim Shalom Ba'olam over here. Now, there's a famous thing in Tovshin Mem, Yud Shvat, that ever gave a hadron on these four Masechtas, which later on was printed in Tovshin Nun Aleph, and that ever goes into it on a much deeper level. That, after all, according to the Aruch HaNer's explanation, according to Marsha, each one you're dealing with, the Protius, you're not really dealing with them as a unit at all. According to the Aruch HaNer, you're dealing with them as a unit, but still each one is a separate prat within it. So still, why do you have the identical wording? So then the Rebbe goes on, and a couple of other questions, among other things, what it has to do with what we said before. So the Rebbe goes into a long explanation about the famous thing by Kriyas Yam, before Kriyas Yamsuf, when the Mitzriyim are pursuing them, we know it says the Jewish people split up into four groups, each of which had a different idea what we should do in this situation. One group said, Nipal Layam, we should fall into the Yamsuf. Another one says we should return to Mitzrayim. Another one says we should fight. Another one says we should daven. Another one says we mitzaveach Megdon, where we should cry out against them, meaning to daven. Another one saying we should fight against them. And Hashem slugs them all up. Stand over here, so don't fall into the Yam, and you won't see the Mitzrayim again. Hashem Yelochem Lachem, etc. And so Hashem just tells them, you go into the Yamsuf and it'll split. So now the Rebbe talks about in the Sicha, The idea being that the deeper idea behind each one of these four groups, they were each their approaches and avoda are valid approaches. They just weren't valid at that particular time. But the Nipalayam in particular was, they're saying we're ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh. Since Hashem is saying that they're not going to return to Mitzrayim, they're not gonna ever be slaves to Mitzrayim, then if the Mitzrayim are going to try to force them into that, they're ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh. So now, and Hashem is telling them that won't be necessary. You'll go on a different kind of Mesiras Nefesh, not where you're going to be killed, but where not where you're going to drown yourselves in the Yam Suf, but where the Yam is going to split for you. Anyway, so corresponding to that, then the Rebbe says we have an Argamada over here. First, we were just talking about what happens when you're taking leave of a mess. He's finished his avoda in the world, and now it's time for him to go to the next world. So now this group of Jews thought that they're in the same situation as well. Our avoda is over, and the only thing is to do is to throw ourselves into Mesiras Nefesh. And Moshe is telling them not so. And then we go on to talk about within Shalom. You can talk about those Shalom that you have. From the point of view of the noisin, of the giver, you have shalom. That's from the point of view of the makabel, and then you have from the point of view of the noisin, from the point of view of the makabel, and then different other ways. So therefore, brachas now is talking about the shalom that you have from the point of view of the noisin, of the giver of Hashem, that therefore, so you're thinking we have to just go on Mesiras Nefesh and be mevatel our existence, because otherwise the Mitzrayim are going to force us to do who knows what. So we're telling you that no, from the point of view of Hashem, he gives you shalom and makes that's not necessary, that you can be marbim shalom ba'olam within our world itself, rather than having to leave this world. And therefore that's what it's doing in this Masechta, and then in each of the other Masechtas, then you have different other angles. And if you have, so this is a big chiddush that I was saying. And then, so now you have the next one in Nozir is more from the point of view of the Makabel. And then after that, you have the point of view of pushing away the menagid through Milchama, which is going to be Masechta Nazir, and so on, and then uniting together the Mashpia and the Makabel together, which is Chrisus, and then it goes into a long arichus about all that. So therefore, the four times that we all finish with Shalom, each of those that Rebbe is talking about represents a different angle on Shalom. The Shalom from the point of view of Hashem, the Noisin, the point of the Shalom that you have from the point of view of the Makabel, that he brings himself to a status of Shalom. The one where you push away the Ra, and the one where you unite everything together. And then those have to do with those four Masechtas. So brachas is the one, mitzad ha-noisin, mitzad Hashem, who gives us everything. And that's what brachas is all about, after all we learned earlier in the Masechta, that Hashem gives us everything and we pay back Hashem by saying brachas, and that way it turns it from Hashem's thing into our thing. So therefore, it fits well with brachas and this idea of that aspect of shalom, which is what the Gemara is focusing on over here. Hadron alach Masechta brachas. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola, Tes Zayin Shvat. So we know La'osib Lavo, everybody's occupation is going to be to know Hashem. So the Rambam's Lashon is Lo Ye'esa Kola Olam El Ladas Hashem. The occupation of the entire world will only be to know Hashem. So what does this mean? What's this diok of Lo Ye'ela? It means that, in other words, nowadays you have, after all, there are other occupations that Torah itself tells you have to do. The Rambam himself, Paskins, for example, that even somebody that's Torah, even somebody with Torah Seyum Nase, even somebody who learns Torah full-time, like the B'Shem Mayachoy, he still needs to do a little bit of Malacha every day in order to live off of. So now the point is that it explains that when the Rambam uses the expression Lo Yia Esek Kol Olam Ela Ladas Hashem, means there won't even be necessary that little bit of Esek. It'll be purely to know Hashem and nothing else. Continuing on Halacha, if you have, so we're still talking about dinim of fruits that are squeezed to make juice, or that are cooked to make soup. So if you have raisins that are moist enough that if you were to squeeze them, then syrup or jelly like stuff would come out of them. Then if you take such grapes and you crush them and soak them in water where you're planning to drink it rather than that you're planning to eat the raisins, then if they stay in the water for 3 days and it starts fermenting and bubbling, and then afterwards you pour it off into another keli, then that drink is considered yayin gomer. It's considered full-fledged wine, and you would say bari priya gafan on it. The Alter Rebbe says even if you didn't pour it into another keli, in other words, even if you just drank it right off the raisins that are at the bottom. And afterwards, you would say Baruch HaMein Shalosh. And for every purpose where you need wine and halacha, you would be yotzeh it. Now, you do have to have, though, that the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says that the raisins have to be at least one-sixth, or have to be one-sixth or more of the volume of the water. So the Alter Rebbe gives a figure over there involving measures that they used in Russia in those times. It comes out according to the Alter Rebbe's figures. The Rebbe Bistritsky is saying over here, it comes out that you would need a much more concentrated thing. According to the Alter Rebbe, you would need no more than 2 parts water for every 3 parts of raisins for it to be considered raisin wine off the Allah. Anyway, so then how do we figure the volume of the raisins? For that purpose, we figure out how much they were before they were dry, what their volume was as grapes, in other words. Now, this is all when you're soaking them, then you need these proportions. If you cook them in water, though, then it doesn't become wine by that. And therefore, you wouldn't make a guffin on it and you can't use it for kiddush and so forth. Then you have another possibility. If you're soaking them or cooking them where you're planning to eat the raisins as well, before we were talking about you're just doing it for the sake of the juice, here we're talking about you're doing it also in order to eat the raisins, then you have various sfeikus about what you do with the liquid. According to the Alter Rebbe, in fact, you would say shakol on the liquid, just like we were talking about before in other cases of soups or juices and then things like that. Chananim ben Akasha, Amatzar, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Zakas Yisrael, Fichi Balan Kametz, Shenema, Adonai.